Welcome to the Leverage Podcast from the Bailey Group. In episode number 3, Lee Bailey talks to Mike Durheim, CEO of The Nerdery.
The Nerdery, very simply, is a custom software development company. We do a lot of different work in technology for a pretty diverse set of clients. Typically, it's things like web development. Some of it is public facing. Some of it's internal. We do mobile application development. We do some work with social media and implementing tools. But you know, generally, the idea is we are just a bunch of passionate technologists who like solving problems for people. So we want to hear about your business. Problems, we want to understand what they are, and then we want to apply technology to solve those problems. And that's what we do for our clients all day long.
So you guys have a really unique name. I'm just the curious nerdery, about how do you become the Nerdery?
Well, we actually started out as, in fact, the kind of the corporate holding entity is still called Sierra Bravo Corporation, which is still actually kind of a unique name maybe, but not a very good unique name. So we started as that company, and honestly how it happened, it was we were at an event where every year we do this thing called the Overnight Web Challenge, and we had some people from the local news there, and they asked Mark, our marketing person, what was going on, like what's going on in this room. And and for context, it's a huge room full of developers who are donating their time to a local nonprofit. And so Mark thought about it for a little bit, and he said, well, you know, just all kinds of stuff. We got programmers over there, and there's, you know, a guy dressed in a Star Wars costume there, and blah 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 blah, and just all kinds of other random, you know, nerdery, he said. And everybody kind of laughed about that and got a chuckle out of it. And I kind of just stuck. Like, we kept talking about it and, you know, about that he said that. And that really kind of represents who we are and stuff like that. And when we thought about an identity for ourselves, that word, the nerdery, it really got much more to the core of what we did. I mean, Sierra Bravo Corporation was a 15-second naming exercise, you know. But the nerdery really got to the core of who we are, and sort of it almost even kind of describes each of our employees, right? I mean, it's who we are. We are totally a bunch of nerds. We love technology. We love using it to solve business problems. We do it at night. When we don't have to. It's just that's who we are. Mm-hmm. And not only did it speak really well to us, like to the internal audience, but it spoke really well to our customers. They understood right away. Oh, right. You're the nerdery. Like, I get it. You guys are all nerds, right? Like, that's what I need. I need a nerd, you know? And so that's how it became a thing.
It's funny how those things, I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, it does so.
Yeah, I wish we would have thought of it, but we just fell into it.
Humorously and accurately describe and give a picture of what you guys do. It really is, you always wish you could have.
Yeah.
Had brilliant strategists
to figure all that out. Yeah. It's so funny, we just did it in 2011, so we spent the vast majority of our history as a completely different name. So,
So one of the things I know about you is that while the nerdery has certainly been a focus for you, that one of the things that you also consider yourself to be is more broadly an entrepreneur, not just CEO of the Nerdery, and just sounds like I'm minimizing that, I'm not, but that you have an entrepreneurial career as well. And I'd be curious if you want to talk about that a little bit. What are some of the other things that you're focused on these days as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, entrepreneurship has always been a big part of my life. I sort of caught the bug, honestly, from my brother a long time ago. I was young. I was a high school kid, or maybe even late grade school, I'm not sure, when my brother, actually probably high school, when my brother started his business, the business he still owns today, which is a hot tub company. And the way he started, quick story, was he just bought a snowmobile trailer and bought a hot tub and started delivering it to people to rent, and I thought, and you know, it was a...
So like rent a tub for parties or something like that.
Right, that's what it was. And he is in a college town, and so that was the kind of thing. And so he did that, and I kind of saw what he was doing, and it really, there was a point where it really started to be like a I really looked at that and I said, huh, that's like a whole different way to live your life. Like, you don't have to, there's the traditional track, you know, like you go and you get a solid education, and you go get a job, and you go and you work your way up through the ladder, and there's all these things. And I think I naively thought that was just the way the world worked, even in even in high school, right? And I saw what he was doing, and I thought, that's awesome. Like, that's so cool. Like, you can just go do that. You can just go start a business, and you can be your own boss, and you can sort of embrace the responsibility of being your own boss, and take the rewards and everything that comes with that, and also the problems. But I always thought that was such a unique thing, you know. And so I decided that was something I was going to be into. And
So what appealed? I mean, was it the appeal of just being your own boss? I mean, what was it that really connected with you around that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's not just the be your own boss thing. To me, it's even deeper than that. It's like it's like taking control of your own destiny, kind of. You know, I mean, it's like you have the ability to succeed or fail based on the decisions you make, and that's really interesting to me. I mean, not that that's not the case just in life in general. It is, but I think that it's so pure in entrepreneurship, you know. Like, it's such a pure, I don't know how else to explain it. It just felt so unique to me. And so I started my first company really right after that. Honestly, I was 15 years old. I got with a partner or a friend of mine and said we should start selling and installing car stereos, because I was in high school and that was cool, right? And so that's what we did. And that was the first business, and since then I've always, you know, whether or not I've had a job or been on my own, I've always had something else going on. And so I love entrepreneurship. I think I get excited to start my day when I'm going to start a new idea or refine an idea just a little bit and turn it into reality. And so I have done it many times in my life to varying degrees of success.
Right? So there's something really appealing, it sounds like, about the direct feedback you get about, so I'm going to do this and it works or it doesn't, but there's this really, and feedback might not be the right word, but there's this direct kind of, I know, did it work or not, and it was me who kind of did this.
I feel like I just feel like it's different, you know? I mean, when you get up and go to work in the morning, you're working towards somebody else's goals, and maybe you have a project or something like that, but it's not, there's no, I've used this metaphor with you before, like, there's no, it doesn't feel like you're climbing a mountain every day, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to me, when you're starting you start a company and you're thinking, about what it's going to be. And it's not, you know, people talk about vision and all these big words, right? And I'm not even talking necessarily about that. I'm talking about right before you fall asleep, you think about something cool or you picture yourself sitting or standing in your desk talking to somebody about it or something like that, right? And so it's a vision, I guess, of what the future looks like, but it's not the big vision that people talk to, like the Steve Jobs vision and stuff like that, right? And to me, if you can, instead of getting up every morning and working towards this priority designed by somebody else, if you can get up and you picture your mountain, and every day you're climbing just a little bit farther up the mountain, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't think you get that when you go to work for somebody else. And it's not that there's anything wrong with it, but for me, if I can get up every morning and make a little bit of progress climbing up this mountain that I've created for myself, I love it. I couldn't see living any other way, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's
but there's such a sense of purposefulness about something that I care about. It's a mountain that I have energy, and then every day to have this sense of, gee, I've made progress on this. It's just such a deep sense of purpose in that.
Yep. I think so. And I've struggled, actually, any time in my life when that hasn't been the case, when I haven't been in a situation where I could do that. And so and to get back to your original question here, I have, you know, the nerdery is obviously near and dear to my heart. I spend an enormous amount of time making sure it's successful. But I also, I have just recently launched with my partner at the nerdery and also another partner, a company called Prime Digital Academy, which is a school ultimately for software developers. So the idea is we're building a school where we can very rapidly bring people from having a, you know, sort of an interest in technology through the program to a point where they are ready to hit the workforce and get into the workforce and start being productive as a software developer as quickly as possible. So it's basically if you go through the entire program, the pre-work, the classroom stuff, and then the internship, it's about a half a year. But we feel like in half a year we can take somebody with almost no software development skill and bring them all the way through to ready to make a difference and be part of a productive member of the workforce. I also am opening a restaurant in a couple weeks with another group of partners, and I have a real estate investment company that I work on sometimes too, and so I kind of juggle all of those things. But
you smile
I like climbing
when you
the mountains.
Say that. It's fun. So I'm curious to what extent being a leader is part of your self-identity. When you think of yourself, do you think of yourself as being a leader? What part does that play?
I think that's actually a really hard question for me to answer, to be honest with you, Lee. Because I think that, you know, when I think about that word, right? Mm-hmm. When I think about leader, the word leadership or any of those things, I think about the people that you would typically identify with kind of like born leaders, right? Like the Steve Jobs guy, or like the
Did you say born leaders or bored leaders?
Born. And I don't know if they are or not, but you know what I'm saying? Like the people that I picture all these people that I think of as leaders, like presidents and heads of industry and all of these guys. And I don't know that I'm like I don't think I would put myself in a place where I would say I'm a natural leader. I don't know. I mean, I think that, so I guess the answer is I don't know that I identify that well with that word. But what I do think is that what I have found to be my personality is exactly what I said, right? I sit at home at night and I think about this mountain. And I get up in the morning and I'm so engaged in the idea of climbing that mountain that I think that I just go start, and I don't do it by myself. I need other people around, and that's part of the mountain for me. And I think that in some ways the people around me follow me and think of me as a leader sometimes because they just know that I have this mountain that I'm climbing, and they see how engaged I am in climbing it, and they think, well, I guess he's charging ahead. He's climbing this mountain. Like, I kind of want to climb that mountain. That sounds cool. He seems to really think it's a good idea. And so so I think people tend to follow. And so I found that if I'm not passionate about the outcome, if I don't want to climb the mountain, people don't want to follow me, which is, no matter how much I tell them, because it's not real. It doesn't come from the place that where I've had a lot of success. And so, like, if I look back on my career at the different times that I've been very effective, right, I would say that the things that I'm doing are very effective, and I think that the people who worked for me in those phases have thought that I was probably a very good leader. Are the times when I was really, really engaged and excited about the outcome, and I could feel almost this mountain and what it was going to feel like when I got to the top. You know what I mean?
That's really interesting. There are a couple things I heard you say. One is that, well, the piece around, you know, we tend to put leaders on this uh-huh. huge stage of Steve Jobs.
Right.
We almost make them superhuman, and that's not exactly what it feels like. But for you, there is this piece around, number one, for me to lead authentically, I have to be passionate myself, and people kind of relate to that.
Right.
And that energy has to be there in order for people to follow. The thing I was curious about was, so I wonder what, okay, so when you kind of look around and realize, oh, there are people now who are following me.
Uh-huh.
So I am kind of in this role, if nothing else, of influencing people to behave in this way, call it leader, call it something else.
Yep.
I'm curious, what are some of the things you think about in terms of the kind of leader, then, if you're in that role, that you want to be? What are sort of the standards you hold yourself to in terms of what it means, if I'm going to be in this role,
right,
to do this role in the way that you think you want to do that?
Yep. I think that for me, it's almost, I'll almost repeat the same story to some extent, but I think that the authenticity and, you know, around what we're trying to accomplish, and sort of transparency around what I think and what we're doing, and just a real clear picture of what what we're trying to accomplish and why and what your part is in it and all of those things. You know, it's not, it's it, that environment is, mm-hmm. is the one that I feel like I thrive in particularly. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you look at the nerdery, for example, I think that we're a little bit of a, we have a unique culture, and our culture is very much around this set of core values that I feel like are extremely important, right? And they're things like, you know, integrity in all circumstances is one of our values, which everybody writes integrity on the walls and stuff like that, right? So it's a common core value. But I think if you dig into what that means for us, it means that at the end, we honestly don't care about the business results. We don't care. Honestly, we would fold up a $1 million business unit in a second if it meant that we couldn't feel good about what we were doing and why we were there, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, that one's is maybe slightly whatever, but another value that we have is look at each problem and solve it pragmatically. And I think that's a value where in our business it's we really do. I mean, like if we can't just go into the situation laying all the pieces on the table, being very transparent about what we're trying to accomplish and why, and having that same interaction from our customer or our coworkers or any of that stuff, like the, mm-hmm. I'm rambling a little bit, but that's the environment that works well for me as a leader, right? Like I need to have that. I don't function well in situations where I can't be a completely open book and say, here's what we're trying to accomplish, these are all the circumstances that exist, and this is the mountain, so let's go climb it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's where I feel like I've been effective. The times in my life where I haven't been, like I said, is in situations where I couldn't do that for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have a completely open book and share every piece of information and just feel like we were all on the team marching towards the goal.
It's so interesting that, so you talked about the value of, I think you used the word integrity, mm-hmm. which is a little less tangible, but there's mm-hmm. this sense of, if there isn't a purpose that I really believe in,
yeah.
Yeah. Whether I'm making money, it's not what it's about.
Right.
But then, so there is that value that's more of an intangible value, but it also gets translated into a very tangible way of doing business, which yeah. is, we got to do this stuff in a very transparent way, yeah. and if we can't, then we're not bringing our best work to bear. Don't want to do that either. That's
right.
That's just not going to work.
Yeah.
One of the things I wondered about, and I wonder this, and I've asked other CEOs this question, you've talked about a mountain a couple times. Uh-huh. And you've emphasized that part for you of that role is you see the mountain and yeah. you're excited about the mountain, and other people then get excited yeah. about climbing them. How clear is the mountain? Do you start with a really clear mountain, or does the mountain get clearer as time goes on? How much is it, I don't know, see more of the mountain as you're creating it, but how much of it is, no, I see the mountain and it's just a matter of yeah. climbing what's out there that I see so passionately?
Yeah, I would say it's much more the former, I guess, than the latter, right? Like, the school is the most recent example, maybe, because it's in initial stages of flight as we speak, right? We've mm-hmm. got our first class in and things are moving along. That really, you know, the mountain originally to climb was very simply this idea that there are not enough qualified entry-level software developers in the market. They just don't exist right now, and it's part of it is situational. The you know, technology is growing so fast; it's getting to be such a big part of our lives. All those things, and so, and we had felt some of that struggle as we grew at the nerdery in not being able to find enough qualified talent and entry-level talent specifically, so that they can be, you know, essentially people could be kind of molded by their experiences into whatever area they eventually decide they want to focus on, all of that kind of stuff. And so the mountain, right, at when we started was, there's got to be a solution to this problem. Like, we should be able to figure out a way. We've had all this history of training people and adding education to people's lives as an employee. There's got to be a way that we can start bringing more entry-level developers into the market. That's it. That's kind of the whole mountain, right? And then from there, you start looking at what other people are doing. You bring people in that are passionate about it, which I think is really important, and it starts to take shape.
And so the mountain is almost a problem that you want to solve, or an outcome you want to get to.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's more tangible, right? Like I one of the things I said I was always going to do was own a restaurant or bar, right? And so that one was pretty easy. Not easy to do, but easy to see the end. And so sometimes it's more clear, but I think most of the time it's not very clear, and you just have to, you know, your objective might be clear, your problem might be clear, or your picture of what that could potentially look like might be clear, but like the Academy, for example, is not what we originally expected. Even some of the things that I talk about as if they were always the idea, like our program specifically is designed to remove the parts of teaching software developers how to work that don't directly impact their ability to be useful on the job, right? So we're very, very focused on making sure people have the skills that they need to be effective on day one, and we're trying to remove anything that would get in the way or would distract from that. So we're teaching some things that would form the base of knowledge, right? But not to the extent that you would get, say, if you went to a 4-year degree program or a certificate program or something like that. Not because we don't think those things are valuable. We do. I mean, there's all kinds of value in those types of things. But we think that if we can purify the problem down to what do you really need? How can we get these people into the workforce? How can we make them effective? How can we get to the point where businesses want to hire these people, right?
And so, like, when I talk about... so consistent with the idea of practically solving... I mean, you're looking at how do we practically address this issue?
Yeah, and it's a core value that not only the nerdery has, I feel like I have it too, right?
Yeah.
And so that led to some of that. But that's what I'm saying. Like when I talk about it, I think it seems like that was just the idea all along. Like, this will be perfect, you know? And it honestly wasn't. I mean, that wasn't the, you know, day one... That's not the mountain. The mountain was formed as we started to really dig into the problem and understand it. And now that's the mountain. You know, now it's I would feel like we didn't climb the mountain if we just created a school that could potentially that turned out people who had a certificate or a certification from us, but when they walked into the door, they had no idea what to do. But they had a good base of knowledge. Like that's a reasonable expectation for a school, but it's not the mountain for me. I don't want to do that. I want to create a program where they're walking in and they're ready to work and they're ready to be a productive member of the development community. That's the mountain, you know?
So it's always vaguely comforting to me because, again, I think one of the ideas is, gee, if I'm going to be a leader, I have to have this capacity to see the world 5 years out and visualize where it is. And no, it's more of a... At least for you in your experience, it's more of a. You start with a general sense of where you're trying to get to, and then it evolves as you start working.
I've actually had a lot of stress about that particular thing in my life. To be honest with you, I've thought about that a lot, and I felt like there are a lot of times in my life where I felt maybe a little bit not qualified to be the leader, right? Because I didn't have that. Like I don't have the. I think that that to some extent that's what people expect. That's the general like understanding of what leadership means. You know, I even talk to people and they're like, I think that the messaging is just kind of goofy because, like I said, when I thought for a long time that my role was to just have all the answers, to just know what the North Star was in extreme detail. And know everything between here and there so that I was sort of the voice of reason in the room that had all that expertise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is not a single person in the world who can do that. Like, that's just not a... And it's not even the right way to do it. You know what I mean? So it took me a long time to really get my head around what it means to have a vision, right? Because people talk about that all the time. And I think that it's probably more accurate to say, you know, have a unrelenting desire to solve a problem. Mm. Like, I think that's much more important, or to meet some objective, whatever that objective is, because the vision itself, the picture of reality that you eventually get to is likely not the one that you started with, but it's still right. It's still the direction that you should be going. It took me a long time to figure that out.
That's really, so the vision is more of a relentlessness around something that I want to solve, or something I want to get, as opposed to, I know exactly how that's going to happen. And
Either that, or that's just what I'm telling myself, because I'm not very good at it. I don't know, but I mean, that's what's been successful for me. I think that just having a, just going out and doing it, and having an idea of what you're trying to accomplish, and letting the rest take shape as you get there, has been much more.
For what it's worth, when I've asked other CEOs the question, the answer tends to be the same. It's like, yeah. I knew kind of what I wanted, but how we were going to get, where I was going to end up, no. I couldn't predict.
Well, good. Looks like I'm doing all right so far.
So I'm curious about one of the things that often is in leaders' backgrounds is experiences that have really influenced how they think about what they do, kind of turning point experiences. Uh-huh. There was a book that was written a bunch of years ago called The Lessons of Experience, when they talked about oftentimes people who are in CEO roles find themselves some point in their career before they become CEOs in situations where they were kind of thrown into a situation and there was nobody around to help figure it out. They just kind of had to figure it out. And part of that built sort of the ability to trust their own judgment. So I'm curious, to the extent that that's been true of you, what have been some of the experiences you've had in your life that have really influenced who you are today and how you approach things?
There have been so many, I don't even know where to start, honestly.
Thank goodness, I thought you were going to say, actually none. That was really
good. Oh no, I have plenty. I mean, I think that, if I go way back, right, I think through my dad, through my parents, but my dad specifically, I think I had a, I think I developed sort of a real sense of responsibility for the situation that I'm in, kind of, you know what I mean? Or like self-reliance or something like that, you know? I mean, I think that one of the things that I always admired about my dad, which I think is probably a lot of kids admire about their parents, is that he always had the answer, regardless of whatever type of situation that we were in, you know? And it's silly things when you're little, like you get a flat tire, and I'm like, I don't know, I just run, you know, or whatever, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But he knows what to do, you know, you go out there, jack the car up, get it all done, right? And I think that, you know, I always looked at that with my dad, and kind of aspired to that to some extent, right? Like, wow, it was amazing to me that he always knew what to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a big part of my life, because I remember a lot of times when I was growing up, both, you know, in business or personal situations or whatever it is, that I would think a little bit about that and say, you know what, this is my problem. Like, I have to decide what I'm going to do next, and I have to take action, and whatever happens, I'm just going to deal with the outcome, and this is my responsibility, you know, which has both created an enormous amount of stress in my life, because I tend to kind of internalize problems and take them on my own without looking for help. But I also, but it has also, like you said, kind of given me a lot of strength, I think, in a lot of ways, to just say, you know what, this is my problem, I'm going to do it, and I'll deal with the consequences. So that wasn't necessarily a turning point, but it has been a really important experience that I think I've applied throughout my entire life. Like, it's not like a, you know, there's nobody there, so you better take responsibility on your own or whatever. Like, it's not really like that. It's just I want to be that guy who is ready to act. Who people
I'm really
look
intrigued
to,
by that, and I'll accept the consequences.
Yeah.
So there, it sounds like, you know, part of it, there's an aspiration around being capable, but there's also this piece of acceptance around, I make the choices and I have the confidence that I'll figure it out, sort of, however this turns out.
Yep.
Where does that resilience come from?
I think, honestly, I have also had a lot of very difficult situations in my life, again, both business and personal, that, you know, I had not my first business partner, but one very early in my career. I owned a small company called North Dakota Internet with a partner, with a couple partners actually. But and one of them was also my boss at the time at this company that I was on the senior leadership team of, and he passed away unexpectedly. Right, just late in the evening, had a heart attack. Horrible situation, passed away, and this guy was so wrapped into my life, both from the standpoint that he was my business partner in this venture that was frankly not making any money and failing anyways, but he was a big part of who I relied on for expertise around that venture. But he was also my boss and the one who was sort of taking care of me from a financial standpoint, because he was the guy signing my paychecks.
Right.
And so he passed away, and an enormous amount of turmoil unexpectedly came into my life very quickly. And I didn't have any choice, right? There was no, I mean, like you said when you started, right? There was no choice that would have me be removed from that situation. There was no, I just won't do this now, you know? I had to do it. I had to deal with it. I had to figure out what the disposition was going to be of my business. I had to figure out what my job was going to be and how I was going to continue to pay the bills and, you know, all of these things that, and I had to deal with losing my friend and business partner. I mean, there are all these things that I had to deal with sort of head on. And I think that situations like that, you don't really know if you can handle it until you do. And, and they develop strength sort of over time. And I've had a number of those situations. My current business partner passed away. It was a similar situation about 3 years ago, and I think that I entered that situation stronger than I would have been had I not been through it in a very similar way before. But I'm much stronger now after going through that one also. And I think those situations that you go through in life give you the confidence to deal with it. And honestly, and sometimes you reach a point where you're like, you know, even if the worst happens here, it's not going to be as bad as that. That was really bad. I don't, you know, it'll be fine. You know, we'll figure it out. I'll deal with it. And I think that on a smaller scale, things will come up in business specifically where a lot of times, like I'll go, you know, I'll talk to my wife about it or whatever, and she'll be like, I can't, how are you so calm about that? Like, how are you even sitting upright right now, you know? And I do, like they are painful or difficult to deal with, but I think that you get not really numb to it because it's still care. I still care a lot, but I just, it'll be fine. It's been fine. So many times it's been fine. And it's going to be fine this time too. And whatever, you know, if we have to make a significant course correction, if we downsize, if everything looks bad, if the market shifts, any of those things, like they're all painful. They're all tough for sure. But I think I've got to a point where I'm kind of at peace with the fact that I'll just figure it out. It'll be fine. You know, whatever. I'll go live in it, you know, whatever it takes, I'll just figure it out.
So is it too simplistic? It sounds like you've had experiences that were really challenging, and coming through those experiences and having some of the things that maybe you haven't even imagined could have happened, did happen, and somehow they built a sort of, I got through those, and they built a sort of confidence in, well, I'll figure out the next one too, one way or the other.
I think so. I mean, I think that is exactly what's happened. I think there's been, I've just been in situations that were difficult enough, and I didn't always handle them perfectly. You know, I made some bigger mistakes that made the situation worse in some of those cases. But I think you just develop a confidence that it'll just be fine. You know, I mean, you know. You can, you know, to some extent, you can look back and say, oh, look how bad I handled that. And I'm still here now and things are pretty good. So I guess, you know, whatever, maybe I won't handle this one quite as bad and it'll be fine. I mean, I think there is you develop a confidence around that.
So I think just as a sidebar, one of the things I appreciate about you is there is this sense of taking the time to look at situations and not struggling with them, but just sort of engaging with them and figuring them out. And I've seen that.
Yeah.
In the time that we've known each other. So that's kind of.
Yeah.
So here's a question I really wanted to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
So your at least history is as a technology guy. So how is technology going to change what leaders need to be good at 10 years from now?
That's a good question, honestly. It's not as simple as it sounds. I think that what I think what is underappreciated. I don't know who underappreciates it exactly, but I think that what's kind of universally unappreciated right now is how important technology is in our lives now. You know, I mean, even 10 years ago, 10 years ago, people would say that, and you'd say, yeah, I know, yeah. And I think that it's nothing like that anymore. I mean, now literally almost every facet of your life, every business relies on technology to function. There are some things that, if you think about, like even like the music industry, right? I mean, it's not, you know, we spent however many years, you know, using magnetic recordable media of one kind or another, and then optical or whatever, but there's always this media, and there was always you had to take a trip to the store to get your music or listen to the radio and cross your fingers and hope it came on, and think of how technology has shifted that industry. And that's an easy example, and I think people can look at that and appreciate it. But I think that what people don't see that I feel like is coming is that is going to systematically happen to every single industry that exists today, because the advances in technology have been so amazing, you know, have been so significant, even just over the course of the last decade. Cars are driving and parking themselves, and that's a reality, you know what I mean? And it's not, we've been talking about someday there'll be flying cars or whatever for years, and it's kind of been a joke, and I still don't know how far that off that's going to be, but self-driving cars is a real thing that is going to really happen at some point very soon. The technology exists, and it's not perfect, but it's to the point now where I can look at it and say, that's actually coming. And I think that's happening everywhere. I mean, computers are able to interact with people almost seamlessly now. You know, this idea of artificial intelligence that's always been a toy is actually out there making real decisions that affect our lives now. I mean, all of these things that I think we've always sort of joked about becoming a reality will become a reality. And I think that, so back to your question about how that affects leadership, I think that how it affects leadership and how it affects businesses is you have to, I think people have to get their heads around that. The fact that it will, that their business, whatever it is, doesn't matter, even if you're a flower shop or a whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever business you happen to be in is going to be significantly impacted by technology over the next
So give
the
me an example.
Decade.
So you own a restaurant now. Mm-hmm. How is the restaurant industry going to be different 5 years from now because of technology?
I think, I don't know the exact answer, but I'll tell you how it's different now than it was 5 years ago.
Okay.
And that I think will be really well, that'll be a good indicator. Mm-hmm. We're talking about marketing for the restaurant and as we launch, what's going to, how are we going to develop a buzz and all these things. And what I'm learning from some of my partners that are in this business is that most every form of advertising is slightly, I don't want to say irrelevant, but not they pale in comparison of importance around other than Yelp, which is a solution to find restaurants and see ratings and stuff like that, and Urban Spoon and some of these things that didn't exist 2 years ago, probably, right? Mm-hmm. That are now the most relevant source of traffic for your restaurant. It's what people are it's what's creating the buzz around your place, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a billboard, it's not a radio ad, it's not a TV ad, it's not a lot of these things that are less and less important now than they've been for a long time. So if you're opening a restaurant, you have to understand those technologies because they are the most relevant source of getting people interested in your business or in your coming to eat at your restaurant.
It's so interesting.
People will drive by if your restaurant isn't rated well on Yelp. And 2 years ago, nobody even knew what that, you know, I mean, it was there, but nobody knew as much about what it was. And it certainly wasn't as relevant. people are expecting to order food online now. People are expecting to get the menu. Honestly, my wife many times won't go to a restaurant unless she can see what they serve online before we go, so she knows if she's going to enjoy her experience there. I mean, all of these things, they're subtle right now, but they are so much. You know, the restaurant, you kind of gave me a softball because it's an easy one, but I think that's happening across the board everywhere.
Hmm. One of the things I wondered about was the role of a leadership team in helping a CEO or an entrepreneur achieve what you seek to achieve. Uh-huh. How important is a team to help you do that? And what do you look for in terms of teams that are really useful and teams that are not so useful?
Yeah. I think it's, the first part of your question, how important, I think it's paramount. I mean, I think that not very often is there a single person or even a small, group that's out taking over the world without at least a few people who are extremely engaged and in the business and are not the business as a whole even necessarily, but their specific area, and they're really able to own and make sure that that's following the vision, that's climbing the same mountain as you are, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that I've certainly been a part of teams that would fall into both of those categories. I get nothing to do with the people. I mean, nothing to do with the even level of talent or quality of the people. I think though that there's something about having a team around you who is just as excited about the goal as you are and absolutely owns their part of that, but also on top of all those things absolutely appreciates that everybody else on the team owns their part, you know what I mean, and this mutual respect, you know, it becomes a harmony, right? It becomes everybody working together towards the same thing, and the force isn't, it's not twice as good because there's two people. It's five times as good because there's two people, because you're working in unison, out across the whole team. So I think it is extremely important to success. I can tell you at the Nerdery it has been critical that as we've grown from three people to 500 people, and the team has evolved along the way, but the team having, like I said, a mutual respect and mutual respect's not even the right word. It's like a mutual admiration of the other person's ability to handle their part of the business, to handle the, not even their part of the business, their part of the plan, and the periods of significant, not only growth and kind of business results, but of fun, like of excitement, all those things have been at periods where I feel like the team really is cohesive.
So one of the things that's come up several times recently for me in conversations with clients has been the sort of this debate about, so what is a good team, and what's the role of the CEO in the team? And it sort of comes down to, well, gee, is the CEO the keeper of the vision, and that, well, gee, if people are in conflict, the CEO's job is to fix that sort of thing, or is it more collectively we sort of own this outcome we're trying to get to, and thus we all have to kind of feel equally responsible for that outcome? And the CEO has an extra vote or whatever, but really it's got to be all of us who are. And I'm curious what your view is on that, because it's a hard question.
It is a hard question. I mean, I think it is. It's an easy question to give you a 90% yes answer, right? Because it's 90% what you, the latter, right? It's 90% the team is responsible for the outcome, and the CEO or the leader's job is to sort of curate the conversations and make sure that the mountain, if I go back to that analogy, is evolving in the right place and it's not becoming a valley. So I guess I think that I'll put it this way. I have not seen an effective team where there's not, I shouldn't say effective. I have not seen the harmony that I'm talking about, the where mm-hmm. where you really see results that you didn't think were possible. I don't think that I know of an example like that where mm-hmm. where the leader is the holder of the vision, the keeper of the vision, right? The guy mm-hmm. who completely has a grip around it, right? Who doesn't let it evolve, and it fits completely into that first bucket mm-hmm. that you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't know how you could, you know, unless there's the you know, like maybe there's the Steve Jobses and right and they or whatever the kind of the people that you think of as leaders who have the like who have this picture in their mind that is so detailed and so pure and so foreign to everybody else around it that they're the sole keeper of that and they're pulling everybody along with them. Mm-hmm. I have never seen an example of that in my life, and I don't know that I really believe that exists. I think that it's much more about surrounding yourself with people who are, you know, I don't want to use a, you know, steel phrase that's been around for a long time, but they're much smarter than you at mm-hmm. at some things, and you're just there to curate the conversation, like I said, to be the one to make sure that, you know, you actually are marching towards the same thing. You actually do share the vision, but there's enough. It's diffused enough. It's diffuse enough that everybody is really, you know, crafting this thing as you go. We're creating it. It's coming more and more into focus every day. It's not. There isn't one person who has the focus, and then everybody else is trying to catch up. Nobody knows. It's not in focus for anybody. But the collective wisdom, the collective team. Is slowly every day, you know, another pixel is coming into
view. It's hard to imagine how people who are really truly competent professional people would want to just simply follow one person.
I don't know why you would.
I don't know that would seem.
Yep. I agree. I don't think it's possible.
So this has really been fun, first of all. I really enjoyed the conversation. I have one more question for you. One of the things that I noticed about you is that at least twice a month I pick up the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal and you're smiling back at me from something, or I see you on, or I hear about you on NPR or whatever it is. I'm curious what it's like to be sort of in that spotlight as a young leader or someone who's really sort of been recognized in this marketplace as somebody who has influence and who's been successful. I just kind of wonder what that's like, or if that's even on your radar screen, what you do with that as part of your day-to-day existence.
Yeah, I mean, you're smiling a little because you know me, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually sort of run away in some ways from that, you know? I mean, obviously the attention has been great for our business. I mean, I love the amount of attention we've gotten from the media. It's kind of let us get the word out more than, you know, this culture and all these ideas and the values and all the things that we hold dear. It's one thing kind of when they're internal, you know, but they've given this like podium to broadcast who we are and to mm-hmm. attract more people like that, not as employees and customers and all of these things. I mean, it's been, so from a business results standpoint, it's awesome. I love it. You know, mm-hmm. we're thought of as the kind of thought leaders in our space in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. and we're portrayed that way. And it's been really, really great. From a personal standpoint, I struggle a little bit with the attention, frankly. Like I'm a pretty quiet guy. I tend to get embarrassed more than anything if somebody tells me I did something that they appreciate or like, and so so I struggle with it a little bit, frankly, from a personal standpoint sometimes, because I get, you know, it's like a minute amount of fame, right? Like I'll go to a store or something, and the person will recognize me or whatever, and it's you lose a little tiny bit of anonymity, and I have such a small, tiny, tiny, tiny view of that. I can't imagine how, like, Steve Jobs would do it. I mean, the guy can't even take his, you know, can't even go pick up a snack at the grocery store or whatever, you know, must drive him crazy. Yeah. So so it's good and bad, but mostly 90% good. I mean, it's been great for the business.
So I smile because I know that's an interesting part of what you exist with. And I think when I talk to leaders about that, one of the things that they say is, on the one hand, they're really comfortable with the responsibility. On the other hand, there's always a disconnect, because it's not about me. It's about about accomplishing whatever it is happens to be. Yep. Well, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you for taking the time today.
Yep.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.